time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 640 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a special episode as Matt Kent returns. Matt is known for working with Keanu Reeves and Jeff Lemire, and he has a surprising new collaborator in the new miniseries Guilt Frame, which is an eccentric and electrifying crime thriller starring the most unlikely detective duo in the history of murder mysteries. It's described this way. Best-selling cartoonist Matt Kent has shattered crowdfunding records with Keanu Reeves on their blockbuster Berserker graphic novels. He's created acclaimed comics with fellow Indie Comics creators Jeff Lemire and David Rubin and his talented studio mate Brian Hirt. And now the creator of Mind Management and Department H has a new and entirely unexpected writing partner, his mother, Margie Kraft Kent. We talk about where the story came from for this miniseries, who the characters are, and how the creators worked with each other to make this book happen, as well as what we might expect from Matt and Margie in the future. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Move over, Keanu Reeves and Jeff Lemire. Best-selling cartoonist Matt Kent has a surprising new collaborator. The creator of Mind Management and Department H is teaming up with his mother, Margie Kraft Kent, for a brand new whodunit murder mystery. It's Kent times two for Guilt Frame, and guilt is spelled G-I-L-T. We got to make sure we get that. I always like to start ladies first. Margie, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I'm having the time of my life. In fact, I will tell you that except for the years my two sons were born, this has been the best year of my life doing this project with Matthew.
Super cool. And of course, Matthew is Matt Kent, who I welcome back to the podcast. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you? Appreciate it.
Good, good. It's good to talk with you again. Of course, I got this great news release, and it's got so much fun stuff in there. I could read this thing and do the whole interview with it because it's all full of good things. Let me read a little bit just so people kind of know. Guilt Frame. Now, important stuff we got to know, that this is going to debut on August 7th this year, and it's a 64-page giant-sized issue number one. Advanced copies will be on sale at San Diego Comic-Con. Does that mean you guys are going to be at San Diego?
There's a couple things here. First of all, there's going to be a variant cover that's like a San Diego exclusive that we're going to be signing. Will it be our first signing together, San Diego?
It will be, yeah.
It's my mom's first time in San Diego.
Starting at the top.
Yeah, I tried to warn her what it's like. There's no prepping really for it. But yeah, that'll be our first official signing together.
Oh, wow. Let me give you a warning, because I remember the first time I went to San Diego, it took me a week to recover from it.
I've watched it on television for years because I know that Matt has been there. So I already have my costume ready.
Oh, goody. Because, you know, if you go downtown San Diego, if you go to New York, you can walk a block away and they have no idea the convention is going on. Yeah. You go to San Diego, it's a whole nother ballgame. The whole downtown basically gets taken over. There's people walking all over downtown in costumes and stuff like that. There's a guy who is dressed up as a chef, a Star Wars guy as a chef, and he's got the head of the, I can't remember the name of the character, on a plate that he walks around, stuff like that.
Sounds great. Yeah.
One of my favorite. Getting startled by a guy who was dressed as a bush on the sidewalk, and he just would yell at people as they walked by.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
I tell you one quick thing about San Diego, and then we'll move on. But I was there. I went to buy this tram ticket, you know. So I went to the tourism place, and the lady was there. And I went to buy the ticket, and the lady says, "Are you here for Comic-Con?" "Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm here for that." "We hate it when you come here." I said, "Wait a minute. This is the tourism booth, right?" "Yeah, yeah. We can't go anywhere for the whole weekend that you got here. It's terrible. We can't stand it." I said, "This is the tourism place saying this to me?" The funniest thing was on Saturday night, you know, the big day is Saturday, of course, in every continent. We were riding in this tram going back to go, and there were all these ladies that were working in, like, the food court kind of stuff. And I mentioned to them what this lady had told me. She said, "Oh, don't believe her. We love it when you come here. We get to work overtime the whole time you're here. We make all kinds of money. So you guys can come every weekend if you want."
Yeah, no, so much money comes in over that weekend. I can't imagine that they would not like it. But you know what's funny is, like, I've been to that show probably 20 times, and I've never seen San Diego in a normal day. It's only been at Comic-Con. That's all I know about it.
It's wild stuff. You just I would start walking now. That way you'll be all exercised up and ready to walk all over creation, because you can walk from one side of the town to the other. Because I had all these things I was going to, and I literally had to walk two buildings down to get to the next thing. I had 10 minutes to get there.
Well, my sneakers are packed.
Oh, good, good. That'll be good things to go. Okay. So, all right. Let's see now. Let me get this excellent stuff in this news release, which I'm going to start with. Let's start talking about you, Margie, because there's a fun paragraph here. Let me read this, and then we'll get into your stuff a little bit. It says, "Margie Kraft-Kent, an educator, went back to school herself to earn a certificate in creative nonfiction writing. Each year, she offers a new lecture series and writes to publish. Though her essays and stories have appeared in magazines and newspapers and on a broadcast by an NPR affiliate in New York City, and though she has won awards and contests, this is her very first published book. She believes she has started at the top. Teaming with one of the best in his field and certainly the dearest, her son Matthew. The author lives with 3,821 boon companions, her books." What's a boon companion, by the way?
It's a phrase from Charles Dickens. A boon means good, a good companion, a good buddy.
Okay, very good. Now, I got to ask, because, you know, my mom was into science fiction, and I grew up along those lines and stuff. So were you always interested in writing and storytelling and things like that?
Yes, from the very beginning. I was, when I was young, I was about four, I had polio, and I was not expected to ever walk again. So I was bedbound for quite a while, years actually. And my books and my pencil and tablet were my boon companions then, my good companions then. So I've always loved to read, always loved to write. Although my generation didn't really grow up with graphic novels, they're quite new to us, and my generation doesn't really take to them a lot. But in fact, Little Lulu was my comic book of choice. But graphic novels are so rich and so deep that I think if we give them a chance, we can our generation can get into them too.
It's so funny you say that, because somebody let me read a Batman comic from the 1940s, and it's so different from what we do today, because, you know, now it takes six issues to tell a story.
Yeah.
And that book, they showed me, and I handled it very gingerly. I was terrified I was going to rip a page or something. There were four separate stories in that book, four complete stories. And I was like, wow, I thought, boy, were things different back in those days. And I was growing up too. Of course, I read a lot of comics, because my mom, and she loved all those kinds of things in science fiction. And also, we would go buy comic books and stuff like that. Our favorite place in the whole town was the store that sold candy and comic books. It was the perfect place. Mm-hmm. And so we used to go there all the time. I still to this day go and buy comics and stuff like that. Good thing. So I'm always fascinated about that. Now, you weren't that means you weren't the kind of mom that threw out the comics after Matt went off to college.
No. Wayne, every Mother's Day, we went to a comic book convention in Kansas City, and we paid for our admission. I was handed a carnation and a thank you, Mom, for bringing your son on Mother's Day to the convention. And it was something. I know how much Matt loved it. I know how much he got out of the conventions. And so, no, I wasn't the kind.
That convention she's talking about was in a strip mall. Underneath the strip mall, you would go down the stairs, and it was like the basement of the strip mall, and it was full of old comics. And Sergio Aragonés was the special guest one year, and it was the biggest deal to see him there. Anyway, so
was he the one that that you learned how to do the blue shadows?
No, there's not. This is the same. This is an interesting story. I don't know if we want to talk about it, but let's talk about it. At this same convention, Sergio was the guest of honor, and then you would walk around. And there were a few other guests, but there was a guy, artist there, Steve Lytle. I don't know if you know him. He's passed away now, but he worked on Legion of Superheroes, is what I knew him from back then. And but he was sitting at a table, and he had these pre-printed on cardstock ink drawings. So one was Conan, and one was somebody else. I can't remember what, but I just remember I had enough money. I could pick one. And they were, I don't know if it was $10 or what it was, but so I picked Conan, and then he would watercolor it. So he'd sit there at the table, and then he'd watercolor the line art, you know, and then sign it and give it to you. And I just remember watching him watercolor. And that's to this day, every time I watercolor every book I've ever done, I think about him, and I watched him put like the flesh tone down for Conan. And I saw him take blue paint and put blue shadow in over the top of it, and I was like, well, that's weird, why would you use blue for the shadow? But that's what you do later. I went to art school later, and they're like, yeah, you do, you know, shadows aren't just gray or a darker version of it, it's, you know, there's, you put some blue in it. but that was my earliest art lesson that I remember having, that every day I still think about when I'm painting,
because conventions back in those days were very different than now.
Yeah, it wasn't like people didn't dress up. It was almost like a dealer show, you know, where it's like long boxes full of comics, and then they would have a few guests though like that. So I don't know. And I know that Jim Lee was from Kansas City, because this is like, was it in Kansas City or was it?
I think it was Kansas
somewhere
City.
Around there. Jim Lee, I think, was at that show before anybody knew who he was too. I think he attended that or was there. It was like a guess one time, but it was just a little show in the basement. Not at all what we have today, but yeah, always on Mother's Day. I was like, why is this always on Mother's Day? It's the worst.
well, but I always found a little Lulu that I didn't have, a vintage little Lulu that I didn't have, so there was something for me too. And I really can't think of any better way to spend a Mother's Day than to watch your child.
When you were a kid, and you had a little Lulu. You had something happened to one of your little Lulu comics. Is that a story? Am I misremembering?
Oh, well, no. I got one dime a month. I could get one comic a month. It was always a little Lulu. And my sister put it down. Our closets. I grew up on a dairy farm. And in the old farmhouse, we had garrets for closets. And my sister dropped my little Lulu down one of the sides of the garret. So it's in the house today, somewhere down in the wall
in the
of
walls.
The house. Yes.
Yeah.
My sister would get mad at me and do things like throw my pencils down.
That's unforgivable. That's unforgivable.
So, when I want to be there when they tear the house down, retrieve all of my goodies.
But that's where somebody found out, like an early Action Comics.
Yeah.
They were taking the wall down in a building, and there was one of the very first Action Comics
Oh my!
Because in the wall, and they were like, "Whoa!" And then they had, it had preserved it so well; it was in excellent condition.
That's crazy.
I'm glad. That's it. Glad Mama, to know.
If that little Lulu had been in Action Comics, we would just buy the house and tear it down. Take that comic.
buy a new house.
Now let's turn right now to talk about Matt's career. Matt's a little different.
I get that lie. That's in my bio.
Now the thing that the first time I really took notice of you, you were actually writing a Justice League book for DC Comics.
Yeah, okay.
Which one was that?
I don't remember.
Oh, it was one of the, because I was as I told you one time.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I saw you at a convention. I said it's easier to list the books that you don't write than the ones that you do, because there were so many books you were writing. Of course, it lists in here Mind Management, Berserker, Bang, ENIAC. Did I pronounce that right? I always mispronounce that.
ENIAC. I've never heard anybody else say it out loud, so I'm not really sure. We'll see if what you said is correct.
There's a book of yours I have never actually read, but I have a hardcover of Pistol Whip. I've got to sit down and read that book. It's just, I just haven't had time, and that's just, it's kind of a bigger book, so I just got to make some time and sit down and read that book.
All right. So, that's my first one, so I read that last.
So you're doing now. You're in charge of this imprint. This that's where this is all coming from. Talk about that for a minute. Why don't you?
Yeah, well, I've been working at Dark Horse, or Dark Horse has been publishing my books for a long time. And like you said, I Justice League. I was for a while. I was doing Marvel and DC. There was a point in time where I was writing books for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Top Shelf. Somebody else in there too. Oh, and Valiant. I was doing Valiant. So there was actually like three different superhero universes I was writing in at the same time. And I would have trouble sleeping at night. I would go to bed thinking about story for the next day, but then I would jump around. I'm like, what is it? I was thinking of a SHIELD, using SHIELD, Agents of SHIELD for something. I was like, no, that's Marvel. I'm in the DC universe tomorrow. So I'd have to course correct, and then that's when I realized I shouldn't be writing that much at once because I was having trouble sleeping. After that, I do all the books I do are creator owned. That's important to me. And Dark Horse has been a great home for that ever since I was a fan of comics. You know, Frank Miller was over there, and Paul Chadwick with Concrete was another big one I really liked, and Art Adams and all those. A lot of those guys, I think it was Dark Horse Legends or something, Jeff Darrow, they're all like heroes of mine in comics. And so Dark Horse is always a good home. And then the last few years, I really just wanted to start having more control of every part of the book. So not just like the story and the art, but like the cover design and the production value and like, you know, the size. Like and that's going to sound like I'm a control freak, which is... It is true, but I think that gets a bad rap. I think when you're doing a book, the cover of the book is the first page of the story. It's super important. And then even the back cover and the inside cover, like those are all part of the story and the experience. So if you're not thinking about that part while you're putting the book together, then you're ignoring part of the story or it feels ignored. And then you can kind of tell. So I wanted Dark Horse let me have that full control. And so every book that comes out with Flux House is something that I'm 100% involved in every part of it, how it looks, what it looks like, and the size. We experiment with different sizes and different covers. Spy Superb had like the actual issues had two covers. One, the cover over the top was just like a paper bag. And then the cover underneath was like the actual cover. You know, and so it was two covers stapled to this thing, and no other publisher would let me do that. But with Flux House, we can kind of do whatever we want.
Very cool. Now, let's talk about Guilt Frame for a little bit here, because it's described in here as an eccentric and electrifying crime thriller starring the most unlikely detective duo in the history of murder mysteries. It's a three-issue whodunit. Other stuff about the good stuff there. So talk about where the story came from. And now it says further on, it says it's a classic whodunit that spans the globe from Paris to Hawaii to Montenegro. stars Sam, an orphan in his early 20s, and his well-off Aunt Mary, as like Merry Christmas, M-E-R-R-Y, who has an outsized appetite for antiques, travel, and solving crimes. Of course, the first thing I got to ask is, how much of you guys are in these characters?
0%. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
0%, that's right.
So, well, that makes me ask, though, where'd they come from then?
That's not true. I'm totally lying.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were going to expose me, Mom.
No. I'll cover for you.
Well, let's talk about it's me and you, but not. I don't think we wanted to do me and you. We wanted it to be some distance, at least superficially. Exactly.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
But talk about where the story idea came from. I think that's interesting. Or you start it, and then I'll finish it.
Well, where do you want me to start with it?
Just start where you start, and then I'll do the second half.
Well, 20 years ago, my mother was ill, and I took a leave of absence from teaching to go take care of her. And it was a very sad time for me, and I had quiet nights while she was in bed. To myself, and I thought, to cheer myself up, I'm just going to start writing fiction, some mystery stories, because I generally write nonfiction, but I didn't have my research materials with me or anything like that. So I thought, I'm just going to have some fun and cheer myself up at night, and I'm going to write a mystery story, and that'll be fun. And I ended up writing three of them. And you wouldn't recognize them in Gilt Frame. I think the seed is there, but that's really how it started. And I would say that we took out a very bland character, and Matt put in Sam, and then we just took it from there.
I'll finish that. That was where That's kind of funny, because that's where it didn't start there for me. That's sort of the backstory what we ended up getting into.
That's right.
But for me, it started when my wife and I came over, Charlene, who's also a colorist in some of my books. shout out to her. We came over, and I was telling my mom, I was like, you need to watch Only Murders in the Building, the TV show. And I think season one had just come out. And I was like, they live in a building just like yours. And it's like, I know you love murder mysteries. It's funny and good and everything. And so we started watching it separately. And then after season one, or halfway through season one, my mom was like, I figured it out. I know who did it. And I was like, what? And she told me, I was like, well, just tell me, and then we'll see if it's, her idea for who did it was so funny, so clever. It was such a great twist. I was like, this show, if they do that, this show is genius. If they don't do that idea, then we're taking that twist and we're going to do our own story. And it was the first time in my whole life that it occurred to me that I was like, oh, we should collaborate on a thing. You know, it wasn't like it's usually because I'm just working on a bunch of things all at the same time. And I don't, whatever. It didn't occur to me. But that idea that she had was so good. I was like, what a great twist. And so we waited for season one, end of season one, of course, they didn't do it. I was like, well, that's disappointing. Also, I'm excited but let's wait. We kind of waited for another season just to make sure it was not doing anything we wanted to do. Most of my ideas, it usually comes from like somebody didn't go this way. They went that way. And I was like, oh, you should have gone that way. so we took that kernel of a twist, And then my mom had written these mysteries, and she's like, well, we have these, we could use these. I was like, well, let's use that one. And then we'll graph this twist onto it. And then we'll change some of the characters. And then I need a character that I can write, and you have a character that you can write. And it was a fun way to collaborate is I would write my character and you would write yours. And then, mm-hmm. and it was like it was fun. We just sit in the kitchen and and I described this before too. I working with Keanu, collaborating with him, had taught me how to co-write, and it's in really your role. It's like a role-playing game where you're, I was like, I'll play this character, you play that character, and then you kind of act it out and then take notes on what happens. So that's kind of where it came from.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
See, I find that interesting because, you know, I was looking through the news release that was talking about it, and it mentions the fact that, Margie, you were talking, what a bonus at this time of life, the gift of pleasure of so many hours and days in the company of a grown-up son sitting across from each other at our partner table, settling into our chairs as we brainstorm plot twists. Each of us takes the roles of our characters. I develop the energetic persona of the star of Guilt Frame, to take charge, Meredith Pearson, Aunt Mary.
Another lie.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And Matt shoots out the dialogue for his best buddy Sammy. We toss around how they would play off each other, so completely immersed in the exhilarating work we're both passionate about that every once in a while we stop and ask each other, "Are you getting this down?" I find that. That's kind of a fun thing because usually it doesn't go that way. Usually when people collaborate, one person does the writing, another person comes along, looks over, makes changes, and then, you know, then they go back and forth between each other. That's kind of fun to hear somebody who actually sits and does the two things together. I thought that was a great idea.
Well, Wayne, I've been working with Matt since the day he was born, and we kind of have it figured out. We're very much alike in temperament, personality, and the way we think, the way we work, and so I think that's what really made us different and special. So we've been working together his whole life.
No, I think we do complement each other. One of us is the smart one, and the other one does the other part, you know. And then I didn't say who is who.
I know.
But I think that was a benefit that I didn't realize was going to happen. To me, I'm so goal oriented and focused on story and trying to do a book that hasn't been done before, or an idea that hasn't been done before. That's all I was focused on, was what a great twist. I can't steal that. We'll have to do it together.
Yes, I would come after you with copyright.
So then, like, I was like, oh, this is, it was actually fun, and like it was nice to work together, and then like we had this extra time to hang out, you know, that we wouldn't have done or probably wouldn't have had if we hadn't had this book to work on or a common goal, you know. I think that was like a side benefit, and I was like, oh, this is, well, maybe this is why we're really doing it. It's not just about the story or the book, even though it isn't.
Matt let me think that Mary was the star of the story. I still think she is, but I know she's not.
Here's what was interesting about the process was, like, my mom she hasn't read a ton of comics. She would take us to the convention, but it wasn't her thing necessarily. I've consumed so many comics in my life that I just know all about them all the time. You know, I have a huge collection, but what was interesting is when we were writing, then we started writing the dialogue and having the scenes and everything. And I'm picturing in my head as we're writing, I'm like, I can see how it'll look on the page as we're talking about the plot and everything. And then when we start writing dialogue, I kind of write how I write, you know. I've written dialogue for 20 years for comics. And my mom, you were writing, and it was great. There was so much dialogue that I was like, I was a little worried. I was like, there's a limited space in comics. And I was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to fit all of this. And then, but I did try to, I think we had to cut it down a little bit, but I was like, I want to preserve as much of this as possible because it was your voice for that character that I didn't want to, I wanted to keep it. I was like, I can't write that, you know? So like, to me, that was the beauty of like collaborating. It was like, I'm not able to write that character's voice like that at all. Like I could fake it and it would feel fake. But when you were writing it, it seemed real and genuine and funny and great. And so I crammed as much of it as I could into there.
Well, because I write nonfiction and I develop people and places through description, that's the way I enjoy writing. And so I did find that it was easier really to write it the dialogue that way and then trim it back. And at one point you said to me, Mom, I don't think you know how few words you're going to get there. Yeah. And that was, I think, the hardest part about the collaboration was it was such a different kind of writing. And I felt like I was losing so much of the character development. But then when I saw Matt starting to draw the characters, I thought, oh, now I understand that what I felt we were losing in personality and character, he was bringing back in the art. When you look at the characters, the way he drew their expressions and their gestures and their stances and the things they did, I thought, oh, the character is still there. It's just now in the art, fewer words, and it's picked up in the art instead. And then that's why it's called a graphic novel, I suppose. It's because the pictures do part of the work, too. So then it felt very satisfying, again, that the characters weren't lost, but were there all along.
Well, you know, it's graphic novels are, and comic books are a visual medium. There are some writers, I could mention him by name. There's one guy, whenever he writes, you'll have two little heads on the bottom of a panel and this massive balloon full of words above their heads. And I always go, they'll cover that somewhere else. And I always turn past that because I'm more interested in what's going on in the visual aspects of it. But I always get a huge kick when people can balance that out so well. But I've got to ask, where did the name Guilt Frame come from?
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
It came from you, but I don't remember why you thought it up.
Well, I love to play with words, and we had to have a working title. It started out as French Frame, and then I like the chairs in the story are gold or are gilt, and I like the play on words there with guilt, and then frame. I like, you know, people being framed in murder mysteries, and there were frames, picture frames, chair frames, and so Guilt Frame just seemed like a good working title, and it stuck.
Yeah, that's what it's almost like a three plays on words, because there's the guilt frame of the picture frames. There's a guilt frame of the chair frames, which is like integral to the mystery, part of the mystery without spoiling it. And then the guilt frame, the obvious one, like being framed for murder or whatever.
But there's a sentence in here that I really like. It says, it's not a locked room murder mystery. It's more of an unlocked, unhinged murder mystery. Do you want to explain a little bit of that, or what does that mean?
Yeah, you know what's funny? Here's the other reason that I collaborate with my mom is I hate coming up with plots or like the puzzle that a mystery needs to be. You know, I did it one time in one of my books, Department H. There's a murder mystery there, and it was like I hated it so much trying to come up with, like, you have to come up with the mystery and then all the suspects and then who's everybody has to have a motive, and then you have to trick the reader into, you know, and thinking it's everybody and hiding who it really is. I hate doing all that. My mom is so good at it. But
well,
I think
we'll
you just have, you have a different mind. You have a mind that works differently than mine. And that, she had puzzled the whole thing out. She has a murder board with the strings and everything going to pictures and different. I'm not interested in doing that. But it's nice to have you as the secret weapon doing that. And then,
and nobody has an alibi. You thought that was unusual. I thought that was.
Yeah. But I remember when we were coming up with the murder scene too. So the murder scene is in one, it's in this, what's the place called?
A gallery.
It's a gallery. So we're coming up with, like, well, what's it look like? What are the clues going to be? And then we just were like, well, let's have like all the clues. So that's the unhinged part, is the actual crime scene is such a crazy mess that there's a few overviews and cutaway views that sort of show all the details and all the clues and everything. But I thought it's not the room. The actual room is unlocked and everything inside is unhinged.
So, can I use the word hell?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's make it look like all hell broke loose because it did.
Well, Well, I like there's another sentence in here. It says, to solve this crime, Sam and Mary will have to wrestle with jewel thieves, art forgers, gun runners, the century-old ghost of the woman in black, a lost puppy, and a master French detective who just might solve the crime before they do. There's lots going on in this, obviously. Yeah,
well. That's it's we there's everything is in it.
in case we only did one book together, we wanted everything to be in it. So.
I think my mom was afraid I wouldn't want to do another one, and then so we jammed this one full. It is funny. I was in the middle. We had written the script, and then I was drawing it, and I forget when I'm working on a comic, I forget how much work it is. Till I'm in the middle or towards the end, and then I'm wondering why I ever do it because it's so much work to do. And then while I was in that phase of it, my mom's like, "I have an idea for book 2 and 3. Here's what we can do." I was like, "Oh my gosh, I can't."
That was the only tension in the collaboration. Right,
that's true.
When he was working on the art, and I was designing book 2.
That was our only friction. I was like, please don't talk to me about it.
I backed off.
To your credit, you did. And then Charlene was like, be nice to your mom. Yeah.
And this evening, Wayne, while we were waiting to join you, we were just sitting here talking, and Matt brought up book 2. So I think that we're...
Yeah, no, it's because I'm over the hump. I finished the production on issue 1. So I was like, okay, now I can... Now I'm thinking about it. I can see the whole thing put together, so that you can see how a second book would work.
But I could understand that when you're working on the art too, because even though I have all of Matt's books and looked at them and have been so amazed with the art, watching him put this together though was a really learning experience. And Matt even let me do a little bit of the watercoloring. I did all of the flesh, and there are lots of heads and arms and legs in this book. I did all the flesh, and then of course he'll go in and do the shadows and make it artistic. But I did the basic piece. But you can't take a watercolor brush to these images without noticing every detail in the picture. And I was just amazed to look at it so carefully, like almost under a microscope. I did have a lens to magnify it actually, and to see the detail, the pride that you took in that work, and then knowing that when these pages are shrunk down, the reader is not going to notice it. You'd have to be a very careful reader and close observer to notice the detail.
I know what you're talking about because I did a book with Brian Hurt called Poppy one time, and he did all the art and then I painted it. And you don't see the art. Even as a reader, you don't look at how you look at it until you have to touch every single part of it.
Yes.
And
yes.
So when you're coloring it, I remember coloring his stuff and I was like, wow, you almost have a conversation with the art. And you get to know it in a way that no one else ever will.
That's right.
Because you haven't looked at it like that. I forgot you. Because you did skin color. You did did you do some of the pants color too?
I did some of that
But I had Charlene. So I had my wife. She painted a page too. I picked out. There's story specific pages that make sense with the story where it might shift in color or style. So I had Charlene paint one. And then we're going to have my daughter paint one in issue 3, probably that will make sense, story sense. So we have three generations of kids.
Cool. Very cool. Now, Chris, when you guys have a disagreement, who is the one that wins out?
My mom wins.
That's not true.
I'm just.
I will tell you that I am so amazed at what Matt has done that I figure, you know, he has this all figured out. I would be a fool not to follow his lead. I don't think we really have. We really didn't have disagreements. I don't think we had disagreements. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we did.
But I would always defer to him because, like I said, he has it figured out. I have not been the success in publishing that he has been. I would be foolish not to learn from him and follow his lead. I think he knows what he's doing. And I have found that I've never been wrong in following his lead.
I appreciate that, but it's interesting. I learned about, I don't think we would have done this book if I hadn't done Berserker with Keanu, because I hadn't ever really co-written a book with someone like that until that happened. And then he kind of showed me how to do it. And I've co-written a couple books with my friend Jeff Lemire. We did Cosmic Detective, and then we did a couple other things. But the way we worked was we just came up with a plot together, and then we split the chapters up, and then we each wrote chapters and then stitched it together at the end. But with Berserker, that was like we had to meet and talk about outline. Then we'd go over every issue. And then it was literally a back and forth over everything. Every beat and every line of dialogue. And doing that with him, it was interesting because he taught me that how you kind of role play the characters and talk out the dialogue. And I was like, oh, it's kind of a fun way to work. But it also taught me, like there's like a power dynamic when you're working together that you have to be very aware of, but you just have to make sure that everybody's being heard or listened to, and then everybody's working towards the same goal. And with Keanu, the power dynamic was like, well, it was his idea and he has ultimate veto power, you know, but he was very good about, I was aware of that, but he was also aware of like, hey, I want to have my voice heard. You know, I need to be, if I'm not putting my thing into this, then why am I here? You know, I'm not just a scribe being dictated to, you know, so that seeing how he handled that helped me in this one, where I don't want to be the dictator in this one. I don't want to be the one that's, you know, and I don't think I felt like we were just cooking it up together.
We think a lot alike.
Yeah. I think just I because think. We were, I was always raised a certain way too. So,
yeah, we share a gene pool. Yeah,
we should be thinking kind of alike. That reminds me that, oh, we have to tell this story. So Wayne, this is how I was brought up. This is why we think alike. And I didn't remember this until I can't remember what brought it up, or we were thinking about like what interview questions would be and then how we worked together and how I was raised and things we did when I was younger. And I'd forgotten this till you remembered, but the crime scenes, talk about the crime scenes you used to make.
Well, I've always liked deduction and figuring out how did this happen and who did this. And so I would set up little scenes for the kids, the two boys, and say, what do you think happened here? And, you know, just to get them thinking that way, I think it's a good way to use your brain.
Yeah, bloody footprints or shoes I can't remember all the details, but there's a lot of little details.
Yeah, I had a pair of shoes, and on the leather soles, there was
it was a wear. There was a wear in the sole of the shoe.
Yeah, there was a hole in the bottom of the leather shoe, and it would look like kind of like a number 7 or something like that. And I said, okay, boys, how did this shoe get worn out this way? And the answer, can we give the answer? The answer was, well, it was from using the brake pedal.
Yeah, it was the shape of the edge of the brake pedal.
It was the shape of a brake of the brake pedal on the car. That was, I think, one of the best clues.
But that's what you raised this to. You, I don't know any other parents that made crime scenes for their kids to solve.
Yeah.
I think that's no wonder that we turned out the way we did. For the better. Yeah.
Hope so.
Well, I have to tell you a quick story. I was watching, I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. It had Bruce Willis in it, and he was talking to this young kid, and I'm there with my friend and his wife, and they're watching me watch this movie because they'd seen it so many times. Gosh, what was it called? I can't remember. But anyway, you get to the end, and just as they're about to give away the plot, I set out the plot. And they looked at me and said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, well, you know, he's dead." It's what the thing of this plot is. The guy's dead. He's only talking to the, Yes, Sixth Sense. And he's talking to the kid, and the only person that ever responds to him is the kid. And so I said to the couple, and I said, well, you know, he's dead. What? They said, how do you know he's dead? Only the kid's the only one he's talking to. That means he's dead. And they were like shocked. And of course, the next minute, that's when they revealed all that stuff in the movie. And they were like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch a movie with you anymore. They said, I figured it out before the movie told us.
That's what I tell Charlene all the time before we go in. I was like, you're going to figure it out. Don't tell me because I won't figure it out. I don't want to know ahead of time. She's
you know, you mentioned Charlene. That reminds me of when you ask what happened when we had differences or in our work. And I was thinking several times Matt's wife, Charlene, would nudge Matt and she would say, now, Maddie, don't boss your mother around.
That's true. So, she's a very good guardrail for me. So.
Very good. Very good. Now, listen, it sounds like the first issue is done.
First issue, I just put it in the can. So it's colored, lettered, all designed, put together, ready to go. And I also, so it's three issues. Each issue is going to be 60 pages. And so the whole, all of it is inked and lettered. And so now I'm just painting it with the help of my mom and my wife and my daughter. We're painting it right now.
Wow.
It'll all be in the can by the time that first issue comes out.
Are they going to come out like the first of every month, first week of every
month? Yeah. We're going to do a monthly and 60 pages each. And then, and it's a murder mystery too. So you don't want too much. We didn't want to draw it out too much because if you draw a murder mystery out for like, whatever, really the whole book it's 180 pages total. And if it was a normal comic, what is it? 20 pages. How many issues would that be? 20, you know, 180 divided by 20, whatever that would be. That's too many issues. You know, I just don't think I'd rather have it like boom, 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 come out. And then you're kind of talking about it, thinking about it for a couple months and then trying to figure it out. And then you get the solution. That's the other thing too, is like when we were writing this, I didn't want it to be the thing I hate about murder mysteries is that you read them once and then you're done. Like The Sixth Sense, you were talking about that. I was like, I don't want you maybe watch it again, knowing the twist, you know? That's murder mysteries are like that too. Or once you know who did it, there's no reason to go back again and read it. And I think that we were very conscious of trying to make this something where the murder and the twist and the plot is interesting and should be fun, but it's not the reason you read it, you know? So the idea is you maybe go back and read it again to pick up on some of the other layers of the characters and everything. And it's not just about the twist at the end.
Very good. Very good. It sounds like a terrific book. I can't wait to get my hands on it and get a chance to read it because I love these kinds of things. I used to watch Investigate Discovery until I finally said one day, I said, I can't watch it anymore. I'm too depressed. Everybody, it's always the wife or the husband always the person you like the most is the one who did the murder and stuff like that. And so I said, I can't watch it anymore. It's too depressing.
It's always the husband or boyfriend. So
that's why they always put him aside first thing and say, you did it, didn't you? real life, but not in these kind of things. So it sounds like lots and lots of fun. Again, it is called, let me get the name is Guilt Frame. And it's going to be coming out as of August 7th. So don't wait to let your comic shop know that you want to get this and get all three of them. 64 issues to it. That's going to be something great. I love a big book like that. Any chance you're going to combine all these issues into like one great big ultimate book when this is all done?
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. It's going to be three issues, but 60, there's 60 pages each. So it's not right. That. It's 180 pages. Yeah, it'll be a book when it's done. But we're trying to make every issue too like special. So there's a little bit of extra stuff in the back and then the back covers. And again, with Flux House and the design of the books, we're trying to make it there be a reason why you would go to the shop and get the issues, you know, because they're going to be a little special. So the production on those will be good. There'll be reason to have those. But yeah, eventually there'll be a book.
Very good. Very good. Sounds like great fun. Looks like it's going to be good. Now, any chance that there's going to be a second series from the two of you?
I started talking about it tonight, but
yeah, I brought it up halfway through the first one,
yeah,
and then put it aside until Matt could collect himself again.
No, and yeah, no, I think we were talking about it tonight because I think the way we end the first book, it changes what the second book needs to be, and then and the third book as well. So I don't want to spoil anything, but except that it wouldn't be a formula. It's not a book. This isn't a series where, like, I don't know what those are, like the Grafton books where it's like an alphabet letter. And then it's not like that where it's like, oh, it's the same premise every time, but a different murder mystery. So it would definitely be a progression if we get to book 2 and 3, which I think we will. Mm-hmm. It would advance the characters in an interesting way, I think. I don't want to spoil it. You have to read it. Good.
It's going to be a great book. I can't wait to see it and stuff like that. And I hope you guys have a great time in San Diego. Get all your exercise in so you're ready to go, and other places and stuff like that too, because it's going to be great fun. You are starting at the top, San Diego, and working with your son. Man, I'll tell you, everything's going to be downhill after. It's going to be, oh, I did that already. So.
I don't have time to start at the bottom.
That's right.
Well, much success. I'm looking forward to, hopefully if you guys are going to do more in the future, hope I get to talk with you again. Lots of fun to talk with you about this, and much success.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.